Page 94, the Private Eye Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Page 94. My name is Andrew Hunter-Murray and this week it is a 1500th issue anniversary bonanza spectacular. Private Eye has been going for 1500 glorious editions, and so everything we do and say on this week's show is going to be celebrating that. We've got the magazine's editor, Ian Hislop, talking about why the magazine is still going after so many years. We will hear from the mysterious, never-before-heard voices of Sheila and Jeff, who sit up on the third floor and do a lot of very important managerial stuff, we gather. And we end with what else but a quiz. This week's magazine has a full 50-question quiz in it, so I've decided to put together a bonus quiz for the quizmaster, Adam McQueen. But first, why is Private Eye still going so many years after its 1961 debut as a tiny yellow magazine on about 8 pages? I ask the Eye's editor, Ian Hislop, exactly what is the secret of its ongoing success?
I think it's still going because the essential satirical impulse is still there. And 1,500 issues on, if you look at the first issue, they were essentially having a go at the Tory party and wondering who was going to take it over. So I don't think public life changes that much in this country. I suppose the real answer in the end is we're still going just because the readers still want us to be going. If I look back at the history, there are certainly times where we were not only reliant on them to buy the magazine, but to bail us out from the various rather desperate court cases, which I seem to have landed us in, and my predecessor Richard Ingram's even more before that. So we're very grateful to the readers on all fronts. They're still sending in, well, quite large contributions to the mag in terms of what they spot and what they know. I mean, half the best stories just come from people telling us things. So we're still going because the readers want us. We are very well managed, which if you look at a lot of media companies, they aren't. And I would have to say we have a very good managing director in Sheila Molnar, who obviously is my employer. So this one's straight in the OBN. And of course, I would have to say there are terrific contributors. I mean, from the 1,000th issue, we've lost some of the old names, but we've got new and I think equally impressive people. I mean, if you want to read about this, obviously there's Adam McQueen, and he's written a book about The Eye, and Nick Newman, who's written a book about the cartoonist. So that should cover most of the credits. Craig Brown and Francis Ween, who again remain unchanging but impressive. And there's the longest serving journalistic contributor in the magazine, which is Slicker, which is Michael Gillard, who writes the In the City column, as he has done for an enormously long time. Very good one in the 1,000th issue. This week you'll be amazed to know that there are problems still in the City of London, and that if you look, say, at people who invest your money, some of them don't seem to be doing it terribly well and won't give it back to you. So, again, there is a plus un change, or plus un loose change, as we say.
We've been having a look at issue 1,000, so that was in about 2001, so it was early days of the Blair administration. We thought it might be late days, but it turned out to be early days. And what's amazing is how many of the things are still cropping up. So there were stories about whistleblowers in the NHS not being treated well and being suspended for raising concerns. There were stories about Richard Branson maybe having a bit less money than he kept saying he did. It's incredible to see these things still relevant now.
Yes, I noticed that there were jokes about a young Vladimir Putin waging war and not being entirely honest about it. There were jokes about the prospects of the troubles in Northern Ireland returning due to bad government policy. There was even a piece about the young Piers Morgan keeping his job at the Mirror in those days while everyone else was sacked.
Gosh, where are they now?
Yes, again, we hear so little about him. So again, a lot of the media landscape is pretty much the same. I mean, the one thing I'm glad to see has changed in on the front of the 1,000th issue, there was the photograph of Andrew Neil with his young companion, which we've stopped running because things changed and Andrew Neil got married. So that was the end of that joke. And I also noticed on the front of the 1,000th issue, there's a Steve Bell, the cartoonist, has obviously thought it was funny at the time, has put in a caricature of a strange-looking person dressed as a choir boy praying in a surplus, which appears to be me. humbugging Anglican, I think, was the tenor of the attack. So, there we go. I mean, in issue 1,000, Paul Foote was still here, the great campaigning journalist, and When he died, I had to employ at least three other people to replace him. But fortunately, the hard journalism section in the back is now longer and bigger and still proving pretty effective. So, yes, I mean, there are new areas and there are all sorts of things that have changed. I mean, there's an energy column now about whether we can keep the lights on at all and whether any sort of energy change is possible. So, I mean, we keep adding. I think the truth is we try and remain, if not exactly cutting edge, because I think I would be pushing it. But again, having a proper look at the new industries and the new issues that turn up.
I had a brief look back at issue 500, and these days the magazine is about double the size it was then. There is just so much more stuff in it. Is it knackering reading double the stuff you used to?
Yes, I think that's largely sort of greed on my part. I always wanted to get more in the magazine, more jokes, more cartoons, more pieces, and the magazine has expanded to fill that. I think there's an optimum size. I mean, charmingly referred to by some of our readers as toilet concentration length. So it shouldn't take you too long, and we don't have any great long reads. You know, there's nothing 5,000 words in there. Well, actually, the occasional special on Putin. But so, yes, it is bigger, and there is a lot more of it. And I have increased the number of cartoons, and I have adopted all sorts of slightly unlikely columns that people are still interested in. But, you know, some things remain the same. I mean, if you're a commuter, you want to read about public transport. They're in there. If you're interested in architecture, Pilotti's no longer with us, but, you know, bad decisions about listed buildings are certainly still there. So the niche stuff's still there, and I hope we're still covering the main stuff. I mean, I do notice that in terms of the jokes, one of the jokes has a huge piece saying, Question Time bias, BBC attacked. And I thought, oh, well, that was 19 years ago in the middle of a different administration, but they were furious about Question Time. I was delighted to see a piece about Red Ken, the shocking truth that he was actually a politician. This was the claim made that Ken Livingstone had been given too much airtime on comedy programmes, and that those programmes, I'm thinking of one in particular, were personally responsible for unleashing Red Ken on an ungrateful nation. So again, some of these stories do go round and round. And there's also a piece about Jemima Puddle Duck having an unfortunate relationship with, it was then Imran Khan, but you just substitute any of the new names and you've got the idea what the story is. Gossip, industry, politics, slightly unchanging in this country.
And one final slightly personal question, how's circulation?
Good. I mean, unlike Corbyn, mine's is very healthy. No, that's so cheap, and I'll have to read the trolls. The circulation, well, interesting, I had a look, and circulation issue 1000, which was the year 2000, our circulation was 174,000. The last issue we sold, that I've got the figures for, the Theresa May memorial issue, that sold 240,000 copies. So the idea that we're dead or that print is dead, I'm afraid it's sadly premature. I mean, the interest in the magazine remains. We're in a difficult climate for journalism and some of the competition has disappeared. There's a great advert in the 1000th issue from the Daily Express, very generous of them, saying we hope we provide ammunition for another 1000 issues. Oddly, we don't do much about the Express anymore. It has failed a bit. We're much more obsessed by the Daily Mail and the Telegraph and various others. So again, the landscape changes and it's become more difficult for journalism, and therefore the eye has profited from that. But, you know, 1500 issues in, I was glad to see a wonderful misprint earlier this week in an obituary of Christopher Booker. It said it was our 15,000th issue, which would be pretty good going. 500 years of the eye, early issues coming out, you know, in the Middle Ages. And though sometimes I personally may feel that, I just think it's incredibly encouraging. And so 1,500 in, I just feel that's pretty extraordinary.
Ian Hislop there. Now, Private Eye would not still be going after so many years without a bit of actual management at the top of the firm. So for this episode, I have finally managed to persuade the Eye's financial director, Jeff Elwell, and the Eye's managing director, Sheila Molnar, to talk about the magazine and their role in it. I started off by asking Sheila about her first contact with Private Eye.
I mean, I started reading Private Eye when I was 19. I picked up a copy and I started reading Foot in the Back, and it just blew my head off. It was amazing, and I've been a fan ever since, and I'm still a fan, even though I've been working here for far too many years.
It's also, you know, amazing value for money. It's only £1 a week, £2 a fortnight. I mean, it's cheap. Can't say cheap.
You can't say
value
cheap.
For money.
Value for money. And of course, it's got an amazing business team, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, very amazing business team, especially the FD and the MD. They're two of the best people in the business.
Absolutely, yes.
So you guys, you've never been on the podcast before. This is, I think, your first appearance.
And the last.
I think you couldn't afford us before, Andy. I think we were way too expensive for you.
So it's very nice to be up here on the third floor, you know, right at the top of the whole operation. And this is from where you guys look down and organise all the business affairs.
Well, yes, and we have conversations with our ghosts, don't we, Jeff?
We do. We have the Private Eye ghost that visits every now and again on the stairs.
That he or she knocks on the door, and we go and say, hello, are you there? And there's nobody there, but we've got quite fond of our ghosts haven't we? Yeah.
We haven't seen them for a while, actually.
No, not for about a year, so it's a bit... bit worrying. Maybe they're upset with us.
Yeah, maybe they got to The Economist for the week.
So it's your job to, I guess, at the simplest level, to get the subscriptions up, get the sales up, and keep them there. Is that it?
I think so. But, you know, I think you guys do all the hard work. We just do our very best to get it out there and read.
Sort of, you sort of make it easy for us to get it out there into the market and to, you know, people want to buy it, people are interested in it. So you're right, it does help that we have a product that's brilliant. It wants to read.
Yeah.
So there's a thing about the covers which I'm always interested about. So I've spoken to Adam McQueen about his, the public vote on all the covers.
Yeah.
And I know that you guys can tell whether a magazine is going to sell well or badly depending on who is on the front cover. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. We have a really good...
It tends to be a politician that don't really help, do they?
No.
So Theresa May.
Boris never sells. People just... He's a big turn-off to people.
Really?
Yeah. Theresa May, Cameron.
Yeah. Tony Blair.
Gordon Brown. Oh, my God.
Now, I would have thought that... having a colourful character like Boris on the front of the magazine would help sales, but you're saying no.
No, you can track our sales by the cover. So the editor usually says, which cover do you want? And we say that one. And so he says, right, well, I'll have the other one. So now we play double bluff with him. We say we want this one when we really want that one. But now he now knows that we play this game. Yeah. So we have a triple order.
We split the vote, don't we? So I'll say one and Sheila'll say the other one. We'll see what Ian goes for.
So who is cover catnip then? Who does work?
Trump did well. Bin Laden. I shouldn't be a terrorist. I should have been accountancy.
Wow, not much call for him anymore, though,
sadly. No. But sometimes a cover will work that you thought, oh, my God, never thought that would take off.
Sometimes when we just do a text cover, like Stockpile This Magazine Now does as well. Mm. Something that's different, really.
And I think Twitter, you get an instant response. You know which cover's going to do well because you can tell by the number of times it gets retweeted.
Yeah. You sort of want it when we pick it up, look at it and read the joke and go, oof, that's a bit near the mark. They're the ones I think work really well.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that's what most other people don't do they?
Yeah. But also I think the covers where we tell people exactly what they're thinking, but they hadn't realised they were thinking it, because sometimes I read the magazine and think, that's so obvious, but it's so clever.
Sheila Molnar there, and before her, Jeff Elwell. Now, staying with the subject of covers for a moment, out of the 1,500 covers, a lot of people ask, what is the best or people's favourite one? And so, this time around, there is an actual public poll about which Eye cover is the greatest of all time. Adam McQueen has been running that poll and making sure everything happens in a free and fair manner. So I spoke to him about the shortlist, which is, of course, available to see in black and white and all the other colours in the latest edition of the magazine.
Amazingly, they are all very recent. The earliest one is 2011, which is the Gotcha cover at the time of the closure of the News of the World. We've got the Woman Has Baby, still a perennial favourite and bandied around again on Twitter when another woman had a baby earlier this year. We've got the best of the Prime Ministers. I was expecting, we went right back to Harold Wilson with this one. But the reader's favourite was Theresa May's one when she turned up. She did that extraordinary curtsy to the Queen. And our cover had the Queen saying, "How low can you go?" And Theresa replying, "I've appointed Boris as Foreign Secretary." Seemed funny at the time, and now he might actually be succeeding her. We got the Hope and Grope cover, which is one of those beautiful graphic covers. It's just the odd thing. We're known for the photo bubble covers, but readers really love it when we do something totally different. And that was a good example of that. And one that didn't quite make the shortlist, which was voted on, was one of my favourites, which was the GM food one back in the 90s when the Blair government were looking at legalising trials of GM foods. And it's just, I don't even know where we got the photo from, but it's this amazing face made out of vegetables, presumably an entry in some competition at a village fate or something somewhere. And the caption just says, "Blair gives assurances," and he's saying, "There is nothing to worry about." Jacob Rees-Mogg finally makes up the five that are now open to the public vote from February last year. "Tories the future. We must throw off the shackles of the EU and trade freely again with Persia, Mesopotamia and Cathay." Which is an ancient joke, but a very modern cover.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of throwbacks in there. So, you know, Gotcha dates back to the Falklands War, doesn't it?
Ian did say he'd been waiting ever since 1983 for the chance to put that on a cover with a picture of Rupert Murdoch. And finally it came around in 2011. And look at the effect it had of the three people on that cover. Rupert Murdoch, Rebecca Brooks and James Murdoch. You know, we got them, and they're all in the same jobs and carrying on as normal, aren't they?
So you don't think the covers have the power to change anything?
We say that. So, I mean, amazingly, it emerges that one of our covers from a couple of months ago, which was the Theresa May's Legacy, the entirely blank cover, did apparently have an enormous effect in Downing Street. She was so shaken by it, and her advisors were so shaken by it, that is supposedly the reason why we've had this raft of announcements about mental health spending and a Windrush memorial and changes to student finance and all these things. She's desperately trying to rattle out a few things in the dying days of her premiership so that she can, maybe she's filling in the cover herself with her marker pen.
Are there any that you're especially sad haven't made it onto the shortlist?
There were a few which didn't even make it onto the long list, which in retrospect, perhaps I slightly regret. Several readers said, "Where on earth was Verwoerd, A Nation Mourns," which was when, you know, the architect, you're looking blank, which is the reason it didn't make it onto the list, because anyone under the age of about 50 will be very confused by this. But Henrik Verwoerd was the leader of South Africa and kind of real architect of apartheid. And when he died, we printed that Verwoerd, A Nation Mourns, and a picture of several Zulu warriors in full tribal dress just jumping joyfully into the air, which is absolutely brilliant cover, but does require a bit of explanation these days. And the other one which readers wished to be on there was, well, they remembered it as being a Prince Harry cover. The cover actually showed Adolf Hitler. And it was
the week after
Harry went to that fancy dress party in full Desert Rat uniform with a swastika armband, and we just had a picture of Hitler on the cover saying, "I'm so embarrassed I've come as Prince Harry."
Adam McQueen there. And we're actually going to stay with Adam for the final section of this week's podcast because, as those of you who have the magazine already will have seen, there is a 50-question quiz written by Adam with some extremely generous and opulent prizes available for the winner. I thought it would be fun to come up with a second quiz to quiz Adam, the quizmaster, on, and that's exactly what we did. So you're very welcome to play along at home as we now play Quiz the Quizzer. Here we go. Here's the first question. Private Eye revealed that the Queen's nickname is Brenda, Prince Charles was Brian. What was Diana's nickname?
Was known in royal circles as Cheryl.
I didn't think you'd get that, and you absolutely... you aced it. All right. What's the motto of St. Cakes, the school?
Oh, do you need the Latin as well as the English?
I'm afraid I do, yeah.
Is it Quis Paget Entrat? It's who pays enters.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And for a bonus point, what is the sock race, which is an ancient St. Cakes tradition?
Oh, God, I'm going to have to guess at that one. It's going to involve violence, isn't it? So it's going to be putting billiard balls in socks and hitting the first years or something.
It's not quite it, I'm afraid. It's close. It's two teams attempting to kill each other in a sea of mud using only socks as weapons.
Oh, fair enough.
Who was the first person to cancel their subscription to the magazine?
Oh, it was a peer, because we've still got the letter, and it's on House of Lords notepaper. And it says, how marvellous were your early issues, but how deplorable now. It was the Marquis of Abergavenny.
Yes.
I can't tell you whether it was first, fourth, fifth or 16th Marquis, but will that do?
Yeah, that will do. It was in May 1964. He wrote, it has deteriorated so much in the past 6 months that I do not wish any further issues to be sent to me. If only he could see it now. Who is, as far as we are aware, the only private eye seller to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Ah, that would be a young buck who was selling copies around the LSE in the 60s, wouldn't it? That would be Mr. Mick Jagger.
Yes, it absolutely would. The Coach and Horses was a Private Eye's lunch venue for over 40 years. Why was it picked as Private Eye's lunch venue?
For the very good reason that it was the closest pub to the then office in Greek Street. Certainly wasn't for the food, which was truly, truly atrocious.
You've got every single one right so far. I wish I'd written some more fiendish questions.
Because I ate enough food at the Coach and Horses. It's indelibly seared into my memory.
Which of these was not a prospective name for Private Eye magazine in the early years? The options are Bent, Finger, The Appendix, or The Bladder.
It would be The Appendix.
That's right.
Yeah. It was The Bladder was a serious contender, and then they didn't want it because Willie Rushton's aunt was suffering from some bladder disease or something, and he thought it would be terribly tasteless and his family would be upset. I can't remember why Finger. I think Finger actually came before Private Eye, because it was supposed to be something stupid. Private Eye is meant to be a detective thing, though the reason for that has sort of been lost, and it was about the idea of private detectives kind of fingering a suspect, which actually just sounds rude when you say it like that. So maybe Private Eye was a better one.
I mean, Bent sounds a bit rude as well.
Bent was never apparently seriously considered a contender. That was a sort of an early prototype, which Christopher Booker was discussing with a guy called Bruce Page, who then went on to work on the Sunday Times Insight team. Imagine that would have been a slightly different magazine, wouldn't you?
Okay, couple more. Pedant's Corner launched in 2002, but what was the second ever debate in the pages of Pedant's Corner?
I see, my mind went completely blank then, but now you said it. It's going to be whether or not it was a corner or a column, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's not it.
Oh!
It's where the apostrophe should go.
Oh, of course it was, yeah. I went for the third one. That was stupid.
Okay, last question of the main quiz. Private Eye's fielded two candidates in elections. They were Willie Rushton in the 60s and Auburn War in the 70s. But who got more votes?
Well, Willie eventually, he was standing against Alec Douglas Hume, who was Prime Minister and had to step down from the Lords in order to get a seat in the Commons.
Yes,
and eventually he told everyone to vote Liberal instead, so he did lose out. So yeah. I think he probably got fewer votes than Bron.
You're absolutely right.
It wasn't that many fewer.
Wasn't. So Rushton got 45.
Okay.
Under the slogan,
Death to the Tories.
Yes. And Auberon Waugh got 79 votes, and he, of course, was standing for which party?
I'm not going to tell you, because that's one of the questions in the quiz in the issue this
that's
week.
Fair enough, but it's a nice little tease, isn't it? Well, you've done brilliantly well. You got 7 out of 8 there. And, as a bonus question, when Private Eye's 1,000th issue came out, about 20 years ago nearly, a few MPs...
It can't be 20 years ago.
It's nearly 20
years. I was working
here. Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm so old.
A few MPs wrote an early day motion sort of congratulating Private Eye.
I remember.
Now, lots of MPs signed it, about 100 or 150 signed it. Can you name any of the MPs who signed it who are still in the House of Commons today?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, what heading did we run it under, which was the Order of the Brown Nose, wasn't it? Well, it won't have been Jeremy Corbyn. It could have been Ken Livingstone.
But still in the House of Commons today.
But not in the House of Commons tonight. Okay. Paul Farrelly?
No, afraid not.
No, he's not in the House of Commons anymore, Bob Marshall Andrews. No, I give up. My mind's gone blank. I can't think of a single MP.
The one you said it definitely wouldn't be, Jeremy Corbyn, officially congratulated Private Eye on turning 1,000.
God, what a bunch of ungrateful bastards we are.
So did John McDonnell.
Did he?
Diane Abbott. They're all there.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
Oh, it's nice. It's nice that they didn't get any kind of special treatment subsequently, as has no one else.
Adam McQueen there. And if you want to take part in the quiz, which has an actual cash prize attached to it, then that is available in this week's edition of the magazine. The cover competition is also to be found on Private Eye's website, private-eye.co.uk. That's it from this week's episode of Page 94. We will be back again in 2 weeks with another one. Until then, the 1500th anniversary issue of Private Eye is available now in all good shops. Goodbye.